This is the Aaron Meta Show. It is the 1st of May of 2023. It is May Day. And so some of you who might be listening to this and not listening to Aaron and Patricia might be very surprised to hear my voice for the first time since the Hey Arnold anniversary show. And so I want to just basically do this first episode and explain a couple of things about why I feel like now is the time after many, many months, and probably even a year of teasing that the Aaron Meta Show is going to come back in some form. So, the first thing I want to do is actually pay tribute to someone very special in my life, and that is Patricia, who, as most people who probably listen to the Aaron Meta Show, also follow Old School Lane as well, and Patricia and Kevin and myself are all part of that little club of ours. And so I want to pay tribute to Patricia because what happened was is that a couple of days ago, we were doing the program for Aaron and Patricia, and so we were planning everything that was going to happen on the show. And so there was a couple of news items that didn't actually make it into this week's episode, which is going to be posted up tomorrow, or Tuesday, if you will, of this week, depending when this podcast comes out. And I do apologize for all the noise that's coming from my computer. But so what happened was is that Patricia said to all these news items that never made it into Aaron and Patricia, she said, babe, why don't you just do the Aaron Meta Show and put them into this show? And I thought, you know something? I mean, I don't exactly know how long of a show that we're going to do, but I will cover a couple of things that didn't make it into Aaron and Patricia, and basically this made it the first ever episode of the Aaron Meta Show in quite some time. So, although maybe I will lay them all out here, but the reason why this show came back is because Patricia just said, look, you need to do the Aaron Meta Show, you need to come back and you need to just do it. You know, you've been talking about it for such a long time, and why don't you just, find, the opportunity to finally sit down and actually do the show and give some people what they want. And so, yeah, here we are. We're back. So, and to everyone who says welcome back, I want to say thank you very much for that. So, and so, what is the future of the Aaron Meta Show at this point? And so, originally, what was going on, during the pandemic and during the time that, I had, locked up inside my house and all that was going on, I was actually wanting to take the Aaron Meta Show one step further. And that one step further was going to be that it was going to have, like, its own, like, 24-hour live stream. It was going to, like, be, like, this thing that would basically be ongoing. It would be doing episodes. And then eventually, come either, like, a Monday or, like, at 9 o'clock UK time, I would then, come on live, in living color and do, like, the newest episode of the show live there and then. The only thing about this is that, unfortunately, bills started to rack up. We are in a cost of living at the minute. And, I'm not in poverty or anything. I'm doing okay. But I really am at the point where, I'm just thinking, do I really need this? Do I really need that? Do I really need to pay for this? And do I really need to pay for that? Let me tell you something. There's been a lot of I've become more financially aware, I think, over the last couple of years about, because, one different thing I think that's happened to me, compared to where I was when I originally did the show back in 2008 going forward is that now, I'm, I own my own house and I now have, a place to live, and with that comes, other responsibilities. Also, Patricia is in my life as well, and, things are going really well with my work, and so, when I first started the show, I got to be honest, I wasn't really in the greatest frames of mind, because obviously it was the financial crisis was going on at the time, which I knew nothing about economics while I was doing the show, and so I kind of ended up focusing more on, like, the personalities within politics and things like that, and so while that was going on, I felt that, I felt like I needed a voice to, propel to everyone, because, I'd work really hard in speech therapy, and as everybody knows, like, I've had, I have autism, and I have Asperger's syndrome, and I have, various, neurological disorders that I've said very many times on this show, and very many times, in public as well, and I make no secret about that, but the point I was going is that, what made the Aaron Meta show quite spicy is that, you know, I felt like I was living some of the problems that a lot of people were feeling at the time. And now things have changed quite significantly. You know, I've been doing, you know, a lot better than I was doing during the financial crisis of 2008. And I felt like, you know, something, I don't feel like I would have the same response, I think, to things that are going on right now here in the world that I would have had, you know, a good couple of years ago, because, you know, things were pretty bad at that time. And I guess some people say that this financial crisis that we're currently going through at the minute, this cost of living crisis that we're currently going through at the moment, the war in Ukraine, things like that, you know, this is a lot worse than, you know, what we were dealing with before. And in some ways, I agree. But I don't know, I just feel like, you know, my voice would have probably got lost in all the other voices that are out there now. Because, you know, what I did, you know, back when I was doing my talk radio days was pretty unique. You know, like, you didn't get, you know, an opportunity just to walk onto a radio station, let alone three radio stations that I was on at the time, you know, when I was doing, you know, the Aaron Meta show back in its prime, I would say, is that, and now here I am as a podcast. And, you know, but everyone's got a podcast now, effectively. And I don't know if what I'm doing right now is any more unique or if I have, like, another perspective. I'll basically safely say this. I have a lot of YouTube going on in my house at the moment. And I have a lot of, like, you know, other voices I listen to on social media and things like that. And I've got to be honest, like, some of the opinions that I usually have are now being echoed in, you know, various other places on social media and various on YouTube, and I was being kind of quite questioning myself, is like, you know, am I really, you know, giving a unique perspective from my side of things, really, compared to other people, like journalists? You know, the one thing I always said about myself is that I don't consider myself a journalist. You know, I'm a talk radio host. You know, I basically just, like, you know, fire on things that, you know, I have opinions about. You know, I just give my two cents on things. I don't really, like, you know, do an in-depth cover of the news or anything like that. I'm just, you know, I'm just a guy with a voice, effectively. And I don't know if what I did was any more, or anything that I'm going to add now over the next couple of weeks, you know, now the Aaron Meta show is effectively back. I don't know if what I'm going to add to the conversation is going to be any different from some of the other stuff, is that, like, you know, racism is awful, you know, like, you know, we really shouldn't go towards fascism, you know, I don't believe I think the culture war is nonsense, effectively. Like, these are things that I think are widely accepted, I think, and I'm sorry as my phone goes off, but I just think that a lot of people, there's a lot of, you know, problems in this world, and there's a lot of problems in politics, whether it's here in the United Kingdom, whether it's over in the United States, and I feel like it's something that we all are aware of, and everyone is saying this thing, and, but, I mean, obviously these voices are so loud that they're really hard to ignore, and a lot larger than mine, by the way. You know, back in the day, I probably would have been, like, you know, one of those louder voices. But, you know, now, I'm not. Like, I'm just, you know, on a podcast. By the way, moved away from Liberated Syndication. Now on, you know, Spotify Podcast or whatever it is, Anchor, whatever it was. Moved on to that. And, you know, I just feel like, you know, am I really adding anything new to that perspective? I really would like to know. Because I just think that I don't know if my voice right now is really making, you know, much else of a difference besides being added to, you know, other louder voices that are, you know, saying the same things that I do. I don't know. So, as you probably imagine, me rambling on for, like, the last 10 minutes, there's no real, like, you know, structures of this episode of the show. It's just going to be me basically saying, look, you know, here I am, I'm back. And I do promise you that as the show evolves naturally over time, that we will, like, have some kind of, like, structure. We will have try and get guests on the show, as we did previously, and try and get some debates going. The one thing I definitely want to talk about, I think right off the bat, is that we are now approaching a local election here in the UK, and you know, the the national issues, I think, of the day are more than likely taking over the actual local elections themselves. You know, I've seen leaflets come through the door about, you know, taxation and local taxes and some of the local issues that are currently going on. But the one thing that the national campaign that the political parties are all going on is seems to be nothing to do with that, effectively. You got the Conservative Party saying that the Labour can't govern, and believe me, they're going to go full throttle on the Labour Party because they know that they're in trouble. The polls all indicate that we are heading towards a Labour government in 2024. And then you got the Labour Party, who, so, you know, are also playing kind of a bit dirty themselves with those viral campaigns that they did on Twitter in regards to Rishi Sunak saying that, you know, oddly saying that he doesn't agree about putting, you know, sex abusers in jail and other horrendous things, and holding him personally accountable for some of the problems that we have in this country. Now, you could say there are some truths to some things that have been said in these campaigns, but, you know, like, the one thing I would say about this is that this, in regards to a local campaign, I mean, I'm pretty sure that with that messaging, you are leaving your local candidates open to basically having to have the national discussion about what they really think about Rishi Sunak in all of this. You know, like, I mean, in regards to what, I mean, here's the thing, the Labour Party never really, you know, ever paid, well, the only time they ever paid attention to me a couple of years ago was, well, like, hoofah that basically happened over at, you know, North Manchester FM, and anyone who was involved in that obviously knows what the score is, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the Labour Party doesn't really care about what I have to say about them, so as far as I know. But, you know, in regards to the campaign that they are running, the Labour Party is leaving themselves open to their local candidates basically turning around and saying, oh, hey, you know, we saw that thing on the internet from the Labour Party Twitter feed about Rishi Sunak and about how he doesn't, like, you know, is being held personally responsible for the fact that, you know, laws aren't being followed and everything else that's going on in this. Like, you know, what do you think about this? And if you're a local candidate who basically just wants to fix local potholes in the road, what are you going to say? Like, you know, it's, I really hope that when they did this, that every single, all the thousands of local candidates that were representing the Labour Party were all briefed on that. Because if they're not, like, you know, they're all sitting ducks, effectively, you know, having to answer to the local paper about stuff that, you know, the Labour Party, the dirt that they're currently throwing over at Rishi. What are they supposed to do in that situation, effectively? Now, I'm sure some people are going to clip this out of context and say, oh, look, Aaron's backing the Tories, which is anyone who follows me on social media, anybody who has seen other episodes of this show, know pretty well what my thoughts of the Conservative Party are. You know, like, the one criticism I always said is that the Conservative Party have always never answered questions properly, always tried to dodge conversations, tried to make it about other people, blame the rest of the world, and not themselves. They are a political party that do not want to improve themselves in any way. I remember when Lee Anderson did that interview, you know, 30p Lee, that they call him. And he said that the Conservative Party are going to win the next election based on the culture war. Because, you know, trying to stop, you know, people of colour from, you know, being recognised and the historical racism that has taken place and making sure that, you know, none of that is, all of that's being combated by, you know, those who don't want to have that conversation, is really going to help mortgage payers and people by trying to, you know, heat their homes and eat. Just think about that for a second. That's their message to the country. They've got nothing. Absolutely nothing left. They've wrecked the economy. They've wrecked the justice system. They've wrecked other things that we all, you know, used to take pride in. The NHS now is slipping down the healthcare table compared to our other European counterparts. God help us if it gets as bad as America. You know, given the way now that we're apparently signed up to this treaty, it probably will. But the Conservative Party have effectively got nothing to give to the British people. Except stopping small boats and asking if, you know, a woman can have a penis. Tell me that that's going to help you in some way. And if it does, then you live far more luxurious lifestyle, and you probably need to pay more taxes. That's just me. Well, the Liberal Democrats are effectively lost in the shuffle, I think, in all of this. I mean, maybe I'm being too harsh. Maybe the fact that they're going to be, you know, eating away at Tory council seats is probably going to be a thing. And I'm guessing if they do enough to convince the pollsters that they are going to be helping effectively, you know, decimate the Conservative Party to the point where, you know, they are going to be in a pretty bad position come 2024. And Sir Keir Starmer effectively is being, you know, being sworn in by the Queen to be the Prime Minister. Oh, sorry, the King, I should say. The King! Okay, I'm still... Yeah, so that's happening as well. And apparently we're supposed to pledge allegiance to him. I mean, is that an order or is that a request? But I digress. The Liberal Democrats, in all of this, I think the best thing that they can hope for is that they're going to be able to do enough to eat away at Conservative Party seats. Because in Labour-supporting areas, I think that message is going to get lost. I think. Because the one thing that they're going to be focusing on, and it's, I think there's going to be a lot of tactical stuff going on in this. Keep this in mind. The this British system that we have is still first past the post. The same shoddy system that's also used by Belarus. And, you know, that's one thing I was hoping that was going to change. You know, in my times of my absence, I thought maybe maybe there might be a possibility that the electoral system's going to change. But no, now we have the same crappy system, only with voter ID laws that we've imported from the United States of America. So we basically have a system now that benefits the elderly. So all the elderly people now will have all sorts of forms of identification. You know, if you have a student ID or if you have a bus pass, nah, totally not. You ain't getting a vote. What do you think this is, a democracy? Seriously? So if you have a, you know, a gold-plated passport or if you have a driver's license and you manage to actually buy it in this whole cost of living crisis, you're actually able to actually buy a car and afford to put petrol in it, you know, you're going to have no problem, you're going to have no problem voting. But everybody else, like the millions of people across this country, are so screwed. Those who can't afford to get this type of identification, or effectively you're going to have to basically get an ID card. Oh, by the way, you know, the ID card, yeah, the policy that has always polled badly in this country, you know, for the last 20 years, and now all of a sudden it's back. You know. Do you ever notice that? That every time, you know, there seems to be a really bad policy that everyone knows is unpopular, the government seems to want to do it anyway. Isn't that a thing? So, anyway, this rambling that I'm doing right now, I just feel like, you know, now that I feel like I've got my free, you know, I feel like I've got that opportunity now to kind of put this back on, basically back on the Aaron Meta show, if I actually do this back again. I feel like I've got a place to kind of vent a little bit. Anyway, enough of the Liberal Democrats. Let's talk about the SNP. Good grief. Who's the next person to get arrested in that party? What on earth is going on in that financial situation in the SNP? Are we basically seeing the downfall of this party at this point? And I think the gears are now switching in regards to them. Like, you know, forget the local elections that might be happening in Scotland. I mean, let's focus on, I mean, is the SNP even going to be a political force, you know, come 2024? If I was in Labour, and if I was, I'd be terrified. But if I was, I would be looking at the SNP situation and seeing an opportunity, I think. Some people think I might be crazy because the Labour Party is not doing very well in Scotland. But, you know, there is a possibility that we might see the SNP collapse, and the one thing that will pay dividends could be is for Labour to obviously strengthen their, you know, their majority when they get into the House of Commons. So that's what we're looking right now at the moment in regards. That's what I'm looking at right now. How many Labour seats are there in SNP territory? Now, I'm pretty sure that some of the bigger names, the ones that aren't being, you know, put behind bars at the moment, I'm pretty sure that they're going to probably hold some of their seats, but you never know. But if you are going to ask me, you know, what's going to happen in Scotland in regards to 2024, I can't tell you for definite, but I'll safely say this, it's where the SNP is right now is not good. So that's definitely something we're going to be following along while the Aaron Mehta show is back. Are we witnessing the downfall of the SNP in this? So, and, I mean, the Green Party is effectively still, like, probably the worst performing Green Party on the planet. So, I like Caroline Ray Lucas. I've retweeted her quite a few times, because I do agree with some of the stuff that she does, but in regards to the party's organization, and I do admit that in some areas within the local community, they have done extraordinarily well in some places, actually snatching Labour seats in some places. And I actually noticed, like, as I drive through some areas of, you know, Cheshire that are pretty strong conservative heartlands, there seems to be a bit of a fight going on with the Green Party at the minute. You see more signs. You see them more active in that. And, you know, as you can see, recently we've had more protests in regards to Extinction Rebellion, you know, Just Stop Oil. Like, I probably imagine these are organizations and people that the Green Party will be wanting to court the vote of, I probably imagine. Because, I mean, those who still believe that, you know, the democratic system is still worth, you know, some sites of salt, that the Green Party could take a look at these people and say, yeah, these are people who are going to vote for us. And these are people who are going to help us along. And there's one group of people here in this country that, you know, if the Labour Party and maybe some of the more left-leaning progressive parties, you know, play their cards right, we'll basically give them a future for the for the foreseeable. And that is Gen Z. And the younger voters, some are also millennials too, but, and probably even the, you know, the Zoomers as well, they are going to be the ones who are basically looking at right-wing politics, looking at the conservative agenda, whether it comes to reproductive rights, whether it comes to immigration, whether it comes to taxation, whether it comes to pretty much any other policy at this point, and also the practical implementations of politics that the Conservatives are doing pretty badly, whether you look at it from a United Kingdom point of view or a United States of America point of view. They are basically turning around to the right wing in the Western world and saying, we want absolutely nothing to do with you. Be gone. That's a bad sign for any political movement when you have a significant portion of the future saying that you don't have one. That's bad. I don't think there's anything else really I can really say about the local election coming up. We basically May 4th. May the 4th be with you. And may it be with you in the polling station. And good grief, I think, I think all the Siths within the Tory party are definitely going to be grabbed and thrown over the side. As in Return of the Jedi. Yeah, that's pretty bad. It's pretty cheesy. But what can I say? It's the first show back, everybody. Come on. Give me a break. Let's talk about the state of the BBC at the moment. The BBC chairman, Richard Sharp, has resigned. And, you know, it's a sad moment, I think, for the BBC and the whole institution. Because right now, it's seen as by very many people as not as trustworthy as it was, you know, back in the day. When, really, when it came to information, all you really had was the BBC. And then we had the internet. And now, you know, regardless of whatever you may think of the conspiracy theories and, like, all the disinformation that's currently going on the internet. And, hey, maybe that's something we'll talk about, you know, longer as we go along. But, you know, the BBC used to be used to be trusted by a lot of people in Britain. And, you know, I've not seen polls recently, but I'm hoping that it's still somewhat up there because as someone who grew up with the BBC and someone who, you know, has appeared on Question Time on two occasions in the audience, like, you know, I never made it to the panel. Okay. Like, you know, it's a work in progress, everybody. You know, like, I'm not Nigel Farage by any stretch of the imagination. Or I'm not anyone from the Institute of Economic Affairs who seems to get, like, a permanent seat on that thing for whatever reason. But in regards to where the BBC is, like, they're caught up now in this scandal. So those of you who do not know, Richard Sharp apparently was a fixer for the... That's the accusation, by the way. The accusation is that Richard Sharp was the fixer for Boris Johnson to secure a loan worth around £800,000. So roughly about $900,000 or $1 million, depending on wealth. The exchange rate is right now. I've not got Google in front of me, so I can't tell you what it is. But so Richard Sharp's resigned because of that, and unfortunately, it brings Boris Johnson once again back in the news because obviously he was the beneficiary of that loan, and then on top of that, there is an accusation because of what he did that made Richard Sharp the prime candidate for being chairman of the BBC. When you put it that way, it super stinks, doesn't it? As far as I'm aware, there's an investigation going on in all of this, and so, but I'm sure as we go along, we'll find out more about this, but goddamn. You know, the BBC at one point was highly trusted by a lot of people. And then when these stories come out, that just weakens away at the trust of the British Broadcasting Corporation. And that's where, you know, other news organizations unfortunately come in. That's where Sky News comes in, and they're leaning a bit further to the left. And that's where, you know, unfortunately you get GB News and this wretched Talk TV, these wretched stations that come in and drag the audience off to the right. It's happening, you know? What's happening in America right now is now happening here in the UK. And it's not, like, suddenly just happened. This has been something that's been progressively happening over time. We are now getting our own versions of MSNBC, which I guess Sky News is sort of falling into that category of. We are seeing our now own versions of Fox News and Newsmax and One America News Network on the right. You know, the Times now has a radio station. And there's other right-wing, you know, various other organizations, media organizations that are now lurching off to the far right and courting, effectively, the racist and bigoted vote in this country, or that audience. And it's further divide of this country that already is pretty divisive in itself, thanks to the silarization of our social media environment that we have. The whole, like, oh, we're going to take everybody and put them into a number of groups, and those groups are going to be fed certain information, and any critical information that you see of that particular group will be shouted down and thrown out. Or blocked, or, you know, muted, or whatever. Because the other side is seen as the liar, and we are the purveyors of truth. Despite how, you know, hypocritical or how inaccurate it may be. We are the truth. And that's what's happening. And so that's the reason why you are getting these types of, like, you know, these conspiracy, funny, you know, Mariana Spring, who is reportedly the disinformation reporter over at the BBC, someone I follow on Twitter, and someone I do have a lot of respect for, you know, she's hamstrung in all of this, in a way. Because, I mean, how can you, you know, with your own organization, you know, try and defend the reputation of it? But, and also, I know other people who also work in the BBC, but this whole saga, you know, reflects pretty badly on them too. Because they are also part of the BBC. Now, the argument obviously is going to be that the BBC is such a large organization that, you know, one part of it doesn't really know what the other part is doing. And the managerial part of the organization is worlds away from the journalists in the newsroom and the sports commentators on Match of the Day. I mean, clearly that's the case because of the whole Gary Lineker affair that took place. You know, Gary, for those of you who do not know, Gary Lineker criticized Suella Braverman, the Home Secretary, for what he considered language that was reminiscent, and I'm paraphrasing here, language that reminiscent of 1930s Germany, which he wasn't wrong about, by the way. Like, you know, I'm pretty sure we'll have an in-depth conversation about that if it comes up, but Gary Lineker said those things. Wasn't right. I mean, this wasn't on the BBC either. This was on his own Twitter account. Which, last I recall, like, you know, we're all entitled to have, and not, and that is within our own sphere, and is not within the parameters of our jobs. You know, we outside of our employment, we can do what we want, you know, within reason. So apparently, because they didn't like what Gary Lineker said on his Twitter account, that mean he needed to go. And Gary Lineker, and then not only did Gary Lineker go, but everyone who was a friend or a colleague or had any ounce of respect for Gary Lineker, no matter which side of the political spectrum they were on, they decided to walk too. And they said they wouldn't be coming back. And this wasn't just the people who were sitting aside of him on Match of the Day producing the main show. These were the commentators also going too. And they said they weren't coming back until Gary Lineker was reinstated. Which he was. And then, obviously, you know, everyone started to come back, and, you know, that was an episode that hopefully they can all put behind them. But it happened. The BBC is not in a good place right now. It's not. And the big problem with all of this is that because, you know, Richard Sharpe has resigned, they're going to have to find a new BBC chairman. And the problem is that Richie Sunak, the Prime Minister, has said that they are not going to, you know, distance themselves from the decision process. He's still going to be the guy, he still might be potentially one of the voices in there who will decide who the next BBC chairman is going to be. But my goodness, like, the media is going to have a field day if it turns out that the next BBC chairman is going to be somebody who has basically had, you know, has broken bread with anybody, whether it's a conservative, former conservative prime minister, whether it's a person within the Lords, whether it's even an MP, even if it's a Tory councillor. The person who is going to be in charge of one of Britain's biggest established organizations. One of the most celebrated parts of, you know, British culture, British sport, the news, entertainment, the whole shebang is going to be entrusted upon into this chairman, effectively. And whoever's going to take up that mantle, I mean, they better do their due diligence on this guy, because I guarantee you, if they find out that there's, you know, even just a small whiff of the fact that, you know, he's had some sort of involvement within the conservative apparatus, or he has held a pretty controversial view, or something, you know, if I was advising him, I would say, look, this is something that you should really, you know, just walk away from and let the semi-competent adults who know at least how to pick somebody who is going to do at least a good job and is not going to cause any controversy or controversy, that, yeah, that those are the people who should be the ones who should be doing this, not you. Not the culture secretary, not the, you know, not any of the advisors, not any, no, you know, the Conservative government entirely should be removed from the decision-making process of the person who chooses the next chairman of the BBC. Whoever that is needs to, whoever makes that decision needs to be isolated entirely from the governmental process. Whether it's the Conservative Party government that makes that decision, whether it's the Labour Party government who makes that decision, whether it's a Liberal Democrat government who makes that decision, whether it's, you know, any other one else. This should be independently done. And the person who should end up with that job is someone who is worked there on their merits, and not just the fact that, you know, they managed to, you know, secure a loan for a Tory MP or a Tory politician. It should just be that simple. Yeah, you know what I feel like? I feel stupid saying that, because, you know, it's something that, you know, is not just me saying that. I'm sure there's a whole other plethora of people who are saying that too. And I'm just another voice in that. You know, like I was saying at the very top of the show, effectively, about that. Let's just cruise to the United States. And I'm guessing maybe this is going to be my final segment of the show, I guess, until I find something other, something interesting too. But good grief, the decimation, I think we can say, of Fox News. The over $700 million that they've had to fork out to Dominion voting systems. And rightly so, because of all the disinformation that they said about this company in regards to their voting machines. And the fact that they even knew that it was wrong from some of their own, you know, hosts of their shows. And the one who's paid the price out of all of this, it seems to be Tucker Carlson. And I was still even amazed from the very beginning of Tucker Carlson Tonight. I was like, really? They gave the Bowtie Man his show? Are you serious? He is going to be a disaster. And lo and behold, he was. Whether it was the interview that he did with the autocratic Viktor Orban, the guy in Hungary who basically is decimating his own country and isolating it from every other democracy in the European community. Whether it was all the crazy conspiracy theories that he came up with, the white supremacist talking points, the fact that he was basically a tunnel, an entryway tunnel into the depths of, you know, white supremacist neo-Nazi thoughts online, and other people who are even, you know, figureheads within that decrepit movement who even admitted that Tucker Carlson leaving has basically shut up a possibility of getting these people on side through that. Tucker Carlson was that lightning rod to all of that. And now they've lost him. Which obviously can only be a good thing. But, you know, the fact that Tucker Carlson managed to last so long in that position, when all the advertisers started to flee, when all the criticism started to come in, when the negotiations were going in with cable providers, and there was concern about Tucker Carlson. But Fox News gambled, and they lost big time. They effectively, you know, they didn't bet the house, but they bet the garage. And they bet the backyard. And now that's going to be repossessed, effectively. And on top of that as well, all those juicy ratings that they were going to get, they're now going to lose to Newsmax. And other, you know, right-wing, crazy, nutty American news stations. You know, that one news station that you have to spend your time at Thanksgiving having to, you know, debate with your uncle about. That station. And so, Tucker Carlson is now no more on Fox News. Definitely not coming back. Can you imagine they ever brought him back? After everything that's happened. The fact that Rupert Murdoch himself reportedly pulled the plug on Tucker Carlson says volumes, in my opinion. I really don't care where Fox News goes in this regard. Like, I mean, there's some people are like saying, "Oh, you know, well, this might be the opportunity for Fox News to go to the center." No, I don't see it happening. Was Sean Hannity still around with all the lunatics on Fox and Friends, Fox and Fiends, as I like to call them? All these nutty people that are still there in the apparatus of Fox News Channel, including the even crazier people who are currently in behind the scenes, who we never see. All those lunatics, you know, those inmates running that asylum. You think it's going to go to the center? No. I don't see it. Yeah, there's going to be... where Fox News... Also, keep this in mind, this is just lawsuit number one. Out of, like, another two lawsuits, I think, they're coming. Smartmatic is going to be the next one. And they're demanding $2 billion. And then there's going to be a third one on top of that. It makes me wonder, in this run of the Aaron Meza show, are we actually going to see the end of Fox News? The station that started off in 1997, the same time that Hey Arnold started... You know, and lasted a lot longer than Hey Arnold, unfortunately. I would prefer Hey Arnold to be back on TV rather than Fox News. But, I mean, isn't this now the end? I mean, are we all going to see them all kind of grouped together saying a goodbye and then they just turn the antenna off? It's unlikely because, I mean, I'm assuming it's still making money. Despite all the controversies and despite all the craziness that's happened. But, I mean... Good grief, I mean, who knows where these other lawsuits are going to go in all of that. Speaking of lawsuits, Donald Trump has now been arraigned. so much for lock her up, huh? Donald Trump in a courtroom. And well, right now he's not in a courtroom, he's up in Scotland right now. I get that, but I don't know. I feel like we're going to slowly start to get to that point because the lawsuits are starting to pile up for him too. This is the interesting thing about the American right wing. Like, you know, they spend so much time lying and deceiving and spreading so much disinformation that they never thought in their small, tiny minds to think about what the consequences of that will be. What are the consequences of lying? Well, we're seeing it, people. What's the consequences of Alex Jones lying? Apparently over $1 billion to the Sandy Hook families and various other people soon because those lawsuits are still pending for InfoWars. What's the consequence of lying for Fox News? We've just seen it. $700 million and counting. What's the consequence of Donald Trump lying? Stormy Daniels somehow, as a adult film actress, becoming a household name effectively at this point, and then this plethora of other lawsuits that currently the MAGA guy, the bad orange man, is now going to have thrown at him. And what's more hilarious about Donald Trump is that he is still favored to become the candidate for the Republican Party for President of the United States of America. I would say he didn't stand a chance if it wasn't the fact that Joe Biden's going to run again. And I don't know about everybody else, but I feel that Joe Biden, you know, really should have been a caretaker president at this point. He should have just said, look, one term to steady the ship. I then go off and retire. I'll go ride my bicycle, or I'll go, you know, spend time with family, or I'll, you know, go do something else. I'll be like, you know, I'll write some articles, or I'll write a book, you know, about my time of, like, saving, you know, America from the brink. And then I will then choose, well, not choose my successor, but I will allow the Democratic Party to basically have its successor. But from what we're seeing, we are going to have Joe Biden. And it's either going to be Mr. I've got too many lawsuits man, or Mr. I'm going to pick a fight with Disney man. My goodness, the alternative for the Republican Party is no better. Ron DeSantis. Where do I begin with this guy? A guy who believes that Florida is a place where woke goes to die. I think John Oliver said it best himself. Florida's not the place where woke goes to die. It's where old New Yorkers go to die. Oh, man. He then writes all these crazy bills, which are basically getting shot down in the courts, and are causing pain and misery for a minority of people. Which, you know, is just have alarm bells ringing in the ears of every young American voter who is going to be chomping at the opportunity to, unfortunately, once again elect Joe Biden for a second term. That's the way that American democracy works. What are they going to do? They vote for a third party. They're going to let in Trump or DeSantis or whoever's going to basically be in that poison chalice of a Republican presidential candidate. You know. And so both of these candidates are effective, you know, whether it's Trump, whether it's DeSantis, and DeSantis, the way that he's pulling Florida apart at the moment, both of these are bad for the Republican Party. Neither of these candidates are good for anybody. And the you don't even need artificial intelligence or AI or even ChatGPT to write you a negative Trump or a negative DeSantis ad. Sure, I mean, like, your anti-Trump, anti-DeSantis campaign ad, clearly you have the first three parts already, you know, in your mind. You don't need, you know, ChatGPT, and we'll talk about that probably later on in this run of the Aaron Metz show. You don't need that to tell you how bad Trump and DeSantis are as potential, you know, candidates for President of the United States. You know how terrible these people are. We've even demonstrated one of them already in that. And people went back to old Joe. Old Sleepy Joe apparently is a hell of a lot better than, you know, the guy who was on The Apprentice and the guy who sent, you know, Macaulay Culkin the wrong way in Home Alone 2. The guy who nearly brought America down, American democracy down, on January the 6th, apparently is not a great pick, according to the young voters of America. And again, like the Conservative Party here in the UK, the Republican Party doesn't know how to talk to these people, and they're slowly becoming the biggest voting bloc in America. Do you know what a sad thing is? Is that imagine if the Republican Party actually took a more stronger line on COVID in regards to masks and vaccines and protecting their voting bloc. Because I guarantee you that a lot of the people who probably would have voted for Trump, that was his real name, now he's, yeah, so you know, who voted for Trump, effectively, you know, would still be alive today and probably would have still handed him his second term. That's scary to think about. You know, the hundreds of thousands, the millions of people who have died of COVID in America. The ones who didn't believe in the virus. The ones who didn't believe in the vaccines, believed that, you know, Bill Gates was putting microchips in them. The people who thought that, you know, their masks were choking them out. Or they just didn't like them because they were weird. Or didn't think that actually had any effect, despite the fact that, you know, Asian countries have been using them for several decades, long before, you know, we all started using them regularly. Imagine if they effectively decimated not only their own campaigns, but effectively the future of their own party, or whatever was left of that party, effectively. Who knows, maybe they would have probably, you know, a couple of years later, they probably would have, you know, they would have bid it, maybe, I don't know. But good grief, imagine if they were still around, if they'd actually, you know, taken care of their own voting base. You know, this is the reason why a lot of people look at the Trump phenomenon and consider it like a death cult. Because look how many people have probably died in that Trump movement. Those who shouted down the vaccines and those who shouted down the virus. They somehow thought that their superior American genes were going to get them through it. Or that they didn't believe in it at all. Or that it was sort of some sort of wacky conspiracy. And now look what's happened. The truth prevailed. In some fashion. We are coming up to the end of the hour, and I think I want to pause on a couple of things before, you know, obviously I wrap up this, kind of this beginning show, because there wasn't any particular plan. I think there was just a couple of things I wanted to basically talk about on this first episode. And again, you know, I want to pay tribute to my fiance. God, I love her. Because she said to me, look, you know, Aaron, you need to do the Aaron Meta show. You need to come back. And that's what I've done. So, I want to say thank you for those who have been listening to this first episode. And I want to say thank you to also, you know, everybody who has supported me, and also people who stuck by me as well while I've been doing this, because, you know, it's been, I just feel like I've been just waiting for the right moment, and, you know, but, that right moment, I don't think it was ever going to come unless I actually, you know, became part of that, decided to do something, effectively. And so, I want to thank Patricia for obviously, you know, pushing me to be, say, look, just do the Aaron Meta show, like, you know, I'm sure everyone appreciate you coming back. And I really hope that that's the case. And, yeah. For those of you who want to follow me, it's twitter.com/Aaron Meta Show. If you want to ask me a question on Tumblr, it's aaronmeta.tumblr.com. I'm back on Instagram, so Aaron Meta Show is still there as well. And also, I mean, I am on YouTube, but obviously I'm still, you know, waiting to figure out what my first video effectively will be if I did come for coming back. And by the way, I want to thank everybody who said, oh, hey, Aaron, I want to see you back on Instagram, I want to see you back on YouTube, because that's been really cool, and because I didn't know if I was going to come back to those social media sites or not, because I didn't know if, you know, people wanted me to come back on there, but they do, which I'm really happy about. So, this week for me, I've got exams coming up on Thursday, I do apologize. And also, I've got a really great week of work, hopefully, coming up with me. And shout out to all my colleagues who might be listening to this too. And also a shout out to Elijah, who has recently come back to, who's the Not So Average Fangirl. She's come back recently to the interwebs and started posting reaction videos again. And so A lot of people have been really, really happy that she's come back as well. And also a shout out to the third Bill, who was proven right on the hoodie hole theory and is now obviously creating t-shirts saying, I believe in the hoodie hole theory, which obviously a lot of people are now buying. So, really happy for him. Also, shout out to Morgan as well. Shout out to Zamba. Shout out to everybody who was on the Owl House podcast that I was on Old School Lane. And shout out to the world, you know, like, it's great to be back. Hopefully, the next show that I do, hopefully I'll have a bit more structure to it. Hopefully, this is just the beginning, you know, this is just me obviously doing this show, you know, letting off some steam, thinking about, philosophizing about where the future is going to go and how we're going to do it. So, thanks everybody for listening. Have a great week. We will see you all next Monday. And we will hopefully have a really great show for you coming up as well. And also, any guest announcements, I definitely will be getting into. So you're listening to The Arrow Messer Show on Spotify Podcasts and also various podcast distributors. If you see my podcast somewhere and I don't give them a shout-out, please let me know about them because I will definitely start talking about them. But for the meantime, find me on Spotify, find me on Apple Podcasts, find me on all those good places. Take care, everybody, and bye-bye for now.